production.
From The Monthly and Listener, it's The Politics. I'm Rachel Withers, and today, bulldozer or bullduster? The polls must be dire. In a press conference hailed as incredibly significant, Scott Morrison today made what has been seen as a huge concession about his performance as Prime Minister. He knows he needs to change. I know Australians know that I can be a bit of a bulldozer when it comes to issues, he said, blaming the pandemic for the fact that he has been a bully for many years now. I know there are things that are going to have to change with the way I do things, added the man who until recently insisted it didn't matter if you didn't like him and who has spent the past few weeks being his usual bullheaded, belligerent self. The desperate pivot, the promise to change, has for many women evoked the image of the abusive boyfriend begging for another chance, promising that it'll be different this time. The changed approach raises two major questions. Is our bulldozer of a Prime Minister capable of change? The answer, it's obvious, is no. An eagle doesn't change its spots. But perhaps more pertinently, will it work on those wavering on him, those wanting to vote Liberal but sick to death of his churlish behaviour? Empty promises often work for abusers, the first few times anyway. The Prime Minister's shameless 11th-hour promise to change after the election is, of course, ludicrous, as are his attempts to put his bulldozer style down to the pandemic and national security. There were obvious comebacks in it for Anthony Albanese, who has for months, if not years, been modelling the kind of leadership that Morrison is suddenly offering. If you want change, the Labor leader told a press conference, don't look for Scott Morrison to change because that's not going to happen. Just change the government. If you look up the definition of desperation, you'll see a photo of Scott Morrison, he joked, although slightly fumbling it. Scott Morrison, after all, has been a blame-shifting, shape-shifting bully since before he entered Parliament. Indeed, such behaviour was allegedly central to the way in which he entered it, using racism and threats to take out the original winner of his seat's pre-selection, Michael Toke. It's also there in the way he took the Prime Ministership, using the kind of underhanded tactics that drove former Liberal MP Julia Banks out of the party, with Banks later describing him as a constant menacing background wallpaper. It's evident in the way he has responded to crises, whether bushfires, floods, or the pandemic, refusing to do the bare minimum and then blaming others when things get worse. As journalist Barry Cassidy tweeted, a bulldozer might have actually been useful during the fires. It's there in the way he has governed, always seeking to divide rather than unite, whether that's mocking city dwellers or lefties or Manchurian candidates, or punching down at transgender people in order to wedge Labor or win votes. It's the way in which he has legislated, refusing to negotiate in a spirit of bipartisanship or good faith. He is still blaming Labor, after all, for his own failure to introduce legislation on an integrity commission. And it was also visible in the way the Prime Minister handled what should have been his moment to change, the veritable reckoning that swept the nation in 2021. Instead, he lied and threatened, backgrounded and finger-pointed, excused and ignored. This, no doubt, is why so many women and men have been quick to compare the Prime Minister's language today to that of an abuser who promises to change. Morrison, for all his claims to have been listening to victims of abuse, ultimately aligned himself with the perpetrators, the blokes. In doing so, he quashed a moment that should have been a turning point for the nation. Why on earth would women listen to him now? The idea that all this could suddenly change on the other side of the election is as absurd as it is insulting. But it's all Morrison has got left, with his better the bulldozer you know approach having so spectacularly failed him. As many people have rightly pointed out, there are some key differences between a bad boyfriend and a bad Prime Minister, not least that people usually have an emotional connection with a partner. It's clear from former Prime Minister John Howard's most recent anti-Teal tirade, however, that the Liberal Party believes there is a group of people out there who love the party but are angry enough with the leadership to want to give them a kick. Don't pretend that you are voting to send a message to the party that you truly love when in reality you don't, Howard said yesterday, a very disquieting line when placed alongside Morrison's new pledge to change. Many of us have learnt a great deal about coercive control over the past 12 months, in no small part thanks to the women who kicked off the moment that the Prime Minister refused to meet. Surely the people of Australia will see through Scott Morrison's most sinister lie yet. Elsewhere in politics, we're starting with our good opinion of the day. Former Democrats leader Natasha Scott Despoja has been disappointed by the absence of long-term vision this election. As she told the Nine papers, "This election feels like the one that has broken my heart." Scott Despoja is a member of Women for Progress, which has released a scorecard showing how the major parties' women's policies stack up. Spoiler alert, not well. And in today's bad opinion, Liberal candidate for Warringah Catherine Deaves says she didn't expect her abhorrent opinions to dominate her run. She told the Nine papers in a sympathetic front-page story, "I did not expect that some tweets about a complex, nuanced argument that I'd been having before I'd even considered putting my hand up for politics were going to dominate my campaign." Deaves repeated her complex, nuanced argument about children being mutilated as recently as Monday. Talking numbers, the Coalition has announced almost $3 billion in spending promises to its top 10 marginal seats ahead of the election. Labor has pledged close to $1 billion for its top 10. And in today's policy, the Coalition has announced a plan to force deportees convicted of a crime to pay for their own detention at a cost of $456 per day. Labor has since backed the gross policy, demanding to know why the Coalition didn't do it sooner. And in today's episode of 7am, with just 1 week to go until Election Day, the debate over the minimum wage has taken the spotlight, and the polls are showing some Coalition strongholds are at risk of falling. So what can we glean about how Labor and the Coalition are gearing up for the final days of the campaign, and should we trust the polls this time around? Today, 7am is joined by a panel of experts to discuss the second last week of the campaign. Listen to 7am now on the Listener app. And that is The Politics for Friday, May 13. Subscribe to The Politics on the Listener app to hear new episodes as soon as they drop. And head to themonthly.com.au to subscribe to The Politics newsletter, delivered straight to your inbox every weekday afternoon. I'm Rachel Withers, and I'll talk to you again next week.